Hello and welcome to the Women's Cricket South Africa podcast, where we discuss all things cricket. Visit our website, womenscricket.co.za. Women's Cricket South Africa podcast is proudly sponsored by Pitches for Africa. Want multiple teams to practice at the same time but don't have enough space? Pitches for Africa has the solution, bringing mobile pitches to clubs, schools and hubs, making cricket accessible to all. Visit pitchesforafrica.co.za for more information.
Welcome to another podcast for Women's Cricket South Africa. Today I have Griselda Brits, and we would have had Jenna Searle, but some people have to study and coach and so on, unfortunately. Hello, Griselda. How are you today?
Hello. Nice and alone with you today. Looking forward to it.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, luckily I like to talk a lot. So this actually suits.
Yeah, nobody to interrupt you.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, there, I just interrupted you.
Like Kirsty the last time, I was just talking all the time.
No, oh, my gosh. No, next time we'll have Kirsty back on. Okay, so we have two games to discuss on the World Cup. South Africa beat New Zealand. South Africa lose to Australia. Where shall we start?
Let's get with the good stuff first. No, I think we played really, really well against New Zealand. We deserved that win, definitely. And we actually did say it was going to be a close one, right?
We did.
So, you know, but we've been playing really well, and I think we did all of the basics well again. Laura again scoring. She can't seem to stop scoring runs, Maddie.
No, so. She just gives me goosebumps. Like, I really wanted to sleep during batting parts, but her performance is amazing.
Yeah, she should definitely share her whatever she takes or eats for breakfast with the rest of the team. But yeah, another really good, solid batting innings from Laura. And that partnership with Sine again, what a crucial partnership. They seem to just, I don't know, like I say, maybe they should just share whatever they have for breakfast in the morning.
They are like Simonier. They just work together. It's amazing. And then with Marizane Cup coming at the end, always just finishing it off beautifully.
Yeah, no, the team seems to have found their groove a bit. Against that New Zealand team, I mean, to beat that team at home in a World Cup, that's really good going. So I think, you know, once again, the bowling unit, Shabnam Ishmael taking 3 wickets. Same with her. She can't seem to do anything wrong at the moment. So, but lovely to see, even in the Australia game where, you know, we lost, just the fire and the heart that she brings to the game, really carrying that team. But yeah, unfortunately, if I have to move on to the Australia game, I really don't want to, but, I said this morning in studio, Maddie, at least we're not peaking too early. So, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Points wise? It's good that we try to keep to the second or third spot on the locks, and then we can take Australia on in the final, unless the fourth team can take them out in the semi-final.
Yeah, I had a quick chat to Cass Naidoo this morning, and I mean, I think we shouldn't be too over-eager at the moment. South Africa still has two big games, notoriously not great against West Indies and World Cups. So, you know, India, West Indies, that's two really tough games. England still in the run there. So anything can happen. I don't think we should shoot too high.
It's open between West Indies, England, New Zealand and India. It all depends on who wins the next games, whose strike rate is the best. If South Africa lose another two games?
We probably out, eh?
Oh, gata patata.
Against Australia, we just didn't pitch up. We didn't have the same energy in the field. We can't fault them. You know, you have to have those off games as well. But Meg Lanning, Maddie, how good is she?
It's like scared of nothing. You know, it's, I got this. No stress.
You know, just chasing down, casually chasing down 270.
Nothing to it. It's just South Africa. I haven't played them in 5 years.
To be fair, she was dropped, right, on 7, I believe. So, and that's the thing. Today, we just didn't look ourselves in the field. A good catch by Mignon de Pria. Did you see that one?
Oh, my gosh, that was amazing. Oh, Minx. Amazing. Well done, girl.
Yeah, that is not many people that can beat that aerial, but
And Ash Gardner's catch. Oh my gosh, it was like two fingertips that just grabbed hold of it.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see some of those in between some ordinary fielder by South Africa today, a few catches that went down. Gardner, I saw. Yeah, Lanning. I mean, and you just can't drop her. But yeah, we have to move on. I said today as well that, you know, you have to take these games one game at a time. You can't sit down and think about your losses. You need to just regroup and make sure the next time you pitch up, and that you're catching with Shabnam Ishmael, because she. Did you see at one stage she had she had her face in her shirt.
Do you think she was swearing?
100% knowing Shabnam.
Oh, my gosh, she was so upset when Lizelle Lee dropped that one, was straight to her. I think it was just too hard to her that she couldn't grab.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, Shabby, she plays with a lot of heart and emotion. And she honestly pitched it. Just the fielders weren't there. So, but yeah, they scored that 270 Australia chased down today with great ease, which is quite scary, isn't it?
Very scary. They're just a class above the rest.
Yeah, well, it's going to take some beating. But, you know, finals is a different game. Mm-hmm. Finals is a different game. So, hopefully. Yeah.
Let's talk about Brits and class not being there. And then who they chose. They chose Laura Goodall to come in for Brits, and then Tumisi Sekhukhune for class. Would you have gone with those two?
Yeah, I mean, Laura Goodall, I actually think she's been unlucky to not have had a chance earlier on in the tournament. And it's actually quite difficult, considering that she's not had a lot of game time. Tasman, she's not been in great form. She struggled to find her feet. She's been a bit lucky to have played the last game against New Zealand. I think that they've made the right decision to try something different. Mm. It's a good time to try it and to give Laura some fair chance to also to score a few runs. And because what you don't want, Manny, is you don't want to bring someone in and they feel that pressure that if they don't score any runs, they're not going to be there the next game. And I'm hoping they'll give her a good few games now to just play. I think she should play all the way through. If we go through to the finals, she should just play, because otherwise you always have that monkey on your back that if I don't perform today, then, you know, Tasman's back in again. And that's not a good energy to have. I don't think they had a choice in terms of bringing Tumisi Sekhukhune in. She went for a few runs today, but class is injured. So, the seam has worked well for us in the past few games.
I would have, instead of Tumi, I know Tumi is good. I love Tumi. I would have, might have brought Nadine de Klerk just to bring that fieriness into the team.
Yeah, I think Australia is also a really clever team. So they were always going to target our fifth, sixth, seventh bowler, right? So, yeah, I guess you have a fair point, but I think it can go any way, right? They might as well have just in the form that Meg Lanning's in. Let's be honest, you could have asked Mitchell Starc to bowl at her today. I think she would have. Let's just hope that that's the last of her runs now for the tournament.
Next thing I want to discuss: the next game, still the same venue. Do you think they're getting the same pitch? It's going to be grassy again.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, today the ball was swinging, so there's definitely some swing for us there. Kapi was swinging it right, or Marizan Kap was swinging it right. You have to hold me back because we give them these nicknames, right? And I'm hoping the listeners are keeping up with all the nicknames. But yeah, Marizan Kap got some good swing even here towards the end. Look, you can't control the weather or where you play or the pitches. It's one of those cliche things, but it just is what it is, right? You can't control these things. And so once again, like I said, have to focus on what we do well, which is we've been bowling really well. And when there's some swing, it suits our game well. So Nay went for a couple of runs today. I saw right here in the inning she got punished for full tosses. Yeah, like I say, I just think it was one of those days, right? If we took some of our catches, it could have gone
way differently.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? It's just how cricket works. Hmm. So, especially against good sides, you can't not be there. You can't not be present.
So they have 2 days until the next game. So not much of resting before they take on West Indies. What are they going to focus on? Fielding?
On winning.
On winning, that's what I
think. No, it's not a bad thing that you don't have a lot of time in between. So you don't sit and fret about, you know, your past matches. I think you actually heard, who's the fitness trainer again? Why can't I get you down to his name? I'm sorry. But anyway, when we had a Zoom call with him after the first one, and he said, you know, there were loads of times in between matches, and that sometimes you sit and wait and watch a lot of cricket. So I think it's good that, you know, we just keep going now. It's all guns blazing till the final, but we need to take one match at a time. Like I say, we're not clear yet. We need to win at least one of the next two games.
How big is the supporting team for the Proteas side? Any idea?
It's probably around eight people.
Yeah, a whole lot of people sitting there behind cheering them on.
Like a whole extra team. You can't keep up to date.
And so many people working in the background helping these girls.
Especially when you have Mignon at the age of 33 years and diving around like that, then I'm sure the physio has to do a bit of rubbing, making sure all that whiplash is up. So, yeah, I think just with West Indies, like we have them next. Because I like to look ahead, Maddie.
It's not ahead. Focus. West Indies and India up next. What are we expecting?
Yeah, so look, I mean, West Indies, we've beat them quite thoroughly in the series, right? So we'll go in with that confidence now. But World Cups are different, and we know that. And Dotton loves to bat against a South African side. So I think we want to work really hard on making sure we get her nice and early.
Yeah, Pakistan showed us we must just go in with good spin against Dotton and she'll just pop it back to the bowler.
Oh, it can go. I've been on the receiving end of a Deandra Dotton with a lot of spin. I think it was Charlize van der Westhuizen, isn't it, at that stage. Dane was still a baby. Actually, Dane and I spoke about it the other day. It was in a 2010 World Cup. Against West Indies, Dotton scored the fastest 100 at the time in a T20 innings. But I remember that day watching Charlize disappear into the stands probably around 12 times. And Dane was still a baby, Dane Fennekerk. And I said to her, she said, "Grizz, I want a bowl." I said, "Actually, for the purpose of your career, I shall not put you against Deandra Dotton right now because you will never play again after if she's in this mood." So yeah,
that is great captaincy. Just save the players while they're young.
I'm so glad I never made up all that poor legs. And at that stage, she was still tossing it up nicely. So I think Deandra Dotton would have had a ball. No, she enjoys batting against us, and I think she'll be key. Hayley Matthews due for a bit of a score, so just want to make sure we restrict and get those two goals early.
So if we win the toss against West Indies, bat or bowl?
We seem to chase well, to be honest. I mean, today 270 against any team would be tough to chase. So I think we're just faced with a really strong Australia team. Yeah, I think for us, we're stronger at chasing. So I would definitely let them bat first, and then know what we're chasing.
Yeah, the bowlers up front, there's no nerves after batting, and then they can just go bowl, get the wickets, and then we know what we have to chase.
Yeah,
and we have cup at the end.
What do you mean, the batting or the bowling? We have cup for both sides, so you have to be more specific, Maddie.
I mean, cup have been brilliant in that nail-biting end of the previous five games. And with against Australia, it wasn't so intense. There was no nail-biting sagas. It was just, okay, here we go again.
Yeah, we were going through the motions of it, weren't we? And very unlike Marizon to not get wickets. But I did see her speak to Shabnam, which was nice to see the two senior bowlers talking to each other. But yeah, like I said, I think the only person that pitched up today was Laura and Shabnam. Sham and Sunay, let's not be harsh.
Oh, no. Well, she had a brilliant strike, right? Getting that 50 so quickly, and she helped to get the score going.
She bats well in that position, I have to tell you. I wasn't a fan of her coming into that position. But, Mary, I'm telling you that I think the captaincy has changed her role in the team tremendously, and the responsibility that she's taking, it's definitely helped her game. I feel like that position really suits her well. And she's definitely been assisting Laura through some tough times with a top order that's not really fired with her. So I think just the difference, I just want to make one more comment. So I told you I was going to talk a lot. You need to stop me.
No, go ahead. You've got a whole 20 more minutes just to talk.
The thing about Laura and them is you don't want to be negative. You can't fault them. But I think, once again, if you look at the difference between the two sides, Australia and South Africa, is the way Australia converts. Like Lanning, she gets 130. And that's one thing we've just been short of, and probably one of the reasons why our scores have just been under par, because we don't seem to convert those 50s into big hundreds.
You mean Laura is not converting this?
And Sinead.
Yeah, Sinead couldn't do it as well. Yeah. She's always there close to the end, and, you know, the 40th over, 10 overs left. And you've got to go big. You've got to take the chances in that. If you have batters coming, then you can't just sit back and relax.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, that's being really, really harsh on two people that have probably batted out of their skins for the last few games and really got us over good scores, over the line for good scores.
So against Australia, Laura was on the player batting stats, getting to be on top. And then she was, yes, she's number one in the World Cup on the best batting. And then here comes Meg Lanning. Takes her over by just 8 runs.
Yeah, but don't be too negative, Mary, because Meg, I think, has played 6 games in the World Cup.
Ah, we've got 2 games left. Mm. Meg only got 1 left.
Mm. So, Laura, if you were into internal competitions then, or records, then you still have a chance.
Yay.
Yeah. And what is the average? So Laura stands on 70 at the moment. I mean, how is that for an average?
That's amazing.
And, I mean, she's only, 23? I would like to see her in 10 years' time. She'll be the Meg Lanning.
No, definitely.
She's already up there, right? She's already up there with the top of the world. And then Marizon Cup as well, up there as always in the top of the bowling figures.
There's 4 bowlers that have 10 wickets in the World Cup. It's Leah from New Zealand, Hayley from West Indies, and then Kap and Kaka from South Africa. Looking at.
Yep.
That's why.
Which is one of the reasons why we're in the top two, right?
Yeah. Let's hope we stay there.
And also, I think I was watching today, also Marizon, Ayabonga and Shabnam in the top 5 of the quickest bowlers.
Can you remember what the speed was?
125 kilometers for Shabnam.
Wow.
Same for Karka, 123 kilometers, I think. That's quick.
That is really quick.
Have you faced that?
No, I don't do those things. I avoid it. I step away and let the stumps fall because I am a little scaredy cat. When Tracy Breast from Gauteng Lions, when I face her, I'm so scared. She's a lefty and she comes and brings that ball from a weird angle and my nerves.
And at least, you know, with Shibnam, you know, I actually think Shibnam hit Meg Lanning on the helmet today. So, yeah, it's quick.
Sure.
And angry. So if you combine those two.
Oh my gosh, she's so angry.
Yeah. And then if someone drops 5 catches off your bowling, I'm sure it doesn't help.
So with Jenna still not being here, she decided to send you some questions. We've been wanting to interview the great Griselda Brits. You captained 2007 till, or do I have it wrong?
I don't know, 2008 till 2012 or something like that. I had a couple of breaks in between. I captained a long time. I captained at provincial level more. I played for South Africa from 2002 to 2014, I think.
Okay. And provincial, which team did you play for?
I played for a lot of provinces.
And you like traveling,
yes.
Right?
Yes. No, but I ended my career at the Gauteng. So I played for a good 9 years there, I think. That's why I said to you the other day, Kirsten, I will have to fight for the gate name at the Wanderers. And anyway, no, I played for Gauteng. I started my career at Northerns as a youngster, but played for Gauteng at the end of my career. So nice to be back in Joburg, in the Highveld.
It's great to have you here. Yeah. It's nice to have all cricketers being still part of cricket and giving their input. It's just great. Well, from your time, who was your idol?
I think it was different back in the day. I used to play a bit of county cricket for Kent in England before all these fancy Super Fours and all of that. I actually think the year I played was the first year just of Super Fours when they started. And back then I really enjoyed playing under Charlotte Edwards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I played a bit of cricket under her. Very, very strong personality. I don't think there's many people. I think she captained in an era where those players really responded to her well. I don't think there's many players that would respond to her as well. So in today's day and age, but very strict, very to the point. And so I enjoyed playing because that was my style. I enjoyed, she got the best out of me. So, yeah, I think back then.
So did you learn from her on how to captain?
I think very much so. I liked her style and I kind of tried to imitate that as well. But, yes, you learn from people, but you also have your own styles, yes, as well.
Definitely. So. Okay, let's start with Jenna Sill. She also would like to get to know you. Here's Jenna.
Hi, Maddie. Hey, Griselda. Thank you for allowing me to be part of the podcast, even though I'm not really in the studio, which is still really cool, by the way. It's a huge honor to be able to ask Griz some questions about her career and just her opinion on cricket in general at the moment. I remember sitting on the side of the cricket field watching you and my sister play cricket for Gauteng back in the day. I was 12 years old and I just remember thinking how cool you were and how I really wanted to play cricket at a level, at the level that you guys were playing at. So I just remember you mentoring Robin. She played under you as a junior player, and I just remember how you mentored her and looked after her, and I really do wish that I had played under a captain who took the time to get to know me and to really show me the ropes and to kind of show the youngsters, you know, how cricket is supposed to be played and the passion and joy of the game, which I do believe you really did show Robin and the younger players in the Gauteng team at that time. So I am a little bit sad that I'm unable to be in the studio with you at this moment and to be asking you these questions in person, but thankful for modern day technology that I'm able to still kind of do it. Yeah, and I'm sure you're going to be great. So here we go.
Are you ready for a question? She's such a big fan of yours.
It's actually so great. We were talking about it to see the youngsters. I remember, you know, Jenna as a baby sitting next to the field and always being there playing a bit of cricket on the side. So it is nice now that I've and for those of you who don't know, that I'm currently living in Hong Kong. So when I come back, I pop into the cricket or I join these sort of things. And it is nice now watching these ladies play. I mean, they're all out of school now and playing proper cricket themselves and good within their own rights. So, it is fun. But anyway, let's hear what she has to ask.
So just to start off with, I'd like to take you back a little bit and just try and remember, I'm sure you do, back to 2007. And it was just before the Pakistan tour when they played in South Africa. It was a ODI series. There were four games. And Chandra Fritz was set to captain that tour against Pakistan. But just before the tour, she got injured and the captaincy was given to you. And I just want to know from you, what did you do in order to bring the team together and to be able to lead them, even though they had just kind of lost their captain in Chandra? And how did you manage to bring them together? And the team that you led in that tour against Pakistan actually won the series 4-0. So if you could just run me through that and what you did to prepare and how you managed to lead the team to that victory.
Sure, I always love when they take me back so long ago.
Many, many moons.
15 years ago. I think, first of all, I remember Chandra was just selected as captain. So I think it was a little bit easier because we hadn't gone through sort of a tour with Chandra as captain. And she then had an accident where she jumped into a pool. She dived into a pool and hit her head and actually had a really bad neck injury.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so kids at home, don't dive into pools. I think it was at night. So.
Oh, okay. Anna, you don't know how deep it is. I'd rather do a dive bomb.
Yeah, go feet first. I think I've always naturally been given the leader role, so it came quite naturally to me. At that stage, that team seemed to have responded pretty well to sort of my style, and maybe we can talk a little bit later about captaincy, etc. But because it doesn't always work right. Later in my career, I wasn't captain anymore because sort of the team had evolved, and there were more players, and it just didn't suit the team, my style. But, yeah, I mean, I was lucky that was the first tour. I personally had a really good tour with the bat. I've always, like I said, always been sort of a captain from when I was in the under-19 setup. So it sort of came quite naturally to me as well. But, yeah, I mean, and also that was very, like I said, the circumstances back then was pretty favorable for me. We had a home tour, Yeah, the team played pretty well together. So it wasn't too difficult, I think, as a start. It would have been more difficult if I was thrown into a World Cup, I think, like Sunei, which is a different ball game, right?
Definitely a different ball game. Okay, here we go with the next question from Jenna Soul.
The author of That's Out by Shannon Landman Creel, she wanted me to ask you, how do you prepare mentally for a big tournament or for a longer tour?
I think, how did you prepare mentally?
Yeah. I think, once again, back in the day, we were just amateur cricketers, right? So we worked during the day. Like, I worked for IBM at the time. I had to train whatever fitness I did to do in the mornings or, you know, after work. And then whatever training I did after work. I think it was a little bit more difficult to sort of get into the groove. We played a lot less cricket. So it was difficult. But, I think we didn't know anything else other than sort of training during the week, after work, and then going on these camps. And then usually we'd always have a camp before we toured, right? So I think during that I made a conscious decision that, you know, when it's when that camp starts, that was it, right? That was cricket time. And you sort of almost take on a professional approach from that moment on. And the other side of that is that I always believe that you had to be professional in everything you do and the way you trained, etc., even when you're not at camp. So, you know, the way I practiced after work or the fitness I did, it was always the same with me. I think anyone can vouch for that. So, yeah, I think, okay, back to, oh, man, Maddie, I talk so much. No, okay. I talk myself confused. No, I think back to the thing is I made a conscious decision that when that camp started as an amateur, just before the tour, that's when cricket started and I had that professional approach to it.
Okay, I'm just going to interject here. Random question. Back then you had to work to make the money. When you go to a camp, were you paid to be at the camp or were you paid anything for going on World Cups or were your flights paid? What was paid from CSA back then for women's cricket?
Yeah, I think I was quite lucky still in the amateur setup that I never ever played or had to pay for anything, right? So at the very least, you didn't ever pay for flights. You didn't pay for your clothing. We always got our, for most of my career, we had, if the men's were, for example, sponsored by Adidas or whoever they were sponsored by, we would get the kit as part of the contract. It would always be the females had to have the same kit as well. What tend to have happened was that as I got older and I traveled more and the game evolved a bit more at an international level, we toured a bit more than usual. So we went from in 2002, we'd maybe tour once or twice a year. And towards the end of my career, we toured 3 to 4 times a year. And, you know, you can imagine as an employer, when you have to start letting someone go for 3 months of the year, it's becoming a bit difficult. So my work has always been fairly understanding, but there were times we had to take some unpaid leave. But yeah, we never had to pay money to play for our country, other than, you know, if we lost in terms of income at work. But yeah.
Okay, thank you. I've been wondering about that question for a while now.
And you know, like there are women's sports like netball, hockey. You know, I know that some hockey, South African hockey players, sometimes when they lose their sponsor, they still need to get the money in to play their national tournaments, which is, you know, it's just quite frankly quite sad, actually.
It is. Okay, next question from Jenna Sol.
A few players over the past few months have taken breaks from cricket due to mental health reasons. Now, Shannon just asked me to ask, do you think that the ICC and the individual cricket boards of the different countries are doing enough to educate players, men and women, on mental health and how to deal with pressure situations and just mental health in general?
I think that's such a good question, Jenna, because I don't think... because the women's game is still so new in terms of professionalism, right? So in terms of getting paid, etc., I think the focus is so much on the exposure and so little on the players that have had to make that transition. Now, Maddie, I told you last time, I think if you think about Marizan and all of those players that played under me as a captain or with me, they were all amateur cricket players and all of a sudden they're pro cricket players, right? And that must in itself be a challenge mentally, right? Because all of a sudden, you're not just not performing, you might not have an income. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is just personally also having struggled with some mental illness problems in the past as well. There just isn't any help. There's no time kind of to say, you know, are you okay? Are you coping with the workload? Maybe now the pressures are different. Back then it was like, are you okay with working full time, having to do all the fitness, then come on tour and it's, you know, day in and day out. So In short, I think in the female game, definitely not. We don't focus on it enough. In the male game, I've seen them touch on it a couple of times, like with Jonathan Trott, Shakib Alazan, those guys. They've, you know, you can see they support them, giving them some breaks from it. I know in England, in the female game, Sarah Taylor has also really struggled with it all her life and tried to get some exposure on it. But I don't see enough of that. I don't see enough, support in that sense. And especially, like I say, at the moment, I think the woman is quite exposed to it because a lot of these players have done this transition from amateur to pro cricket. And that workload and that transition must be a huge mental shift as well.
I feel it should be something that from provincial side, if you're getting a contract provincial, you should be also given a psychologist, sports psychologist, somebody to help you guide through all the pressures you're going to start facing. And if you start performing, how to face all those pressures.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't think there's a psychologist that would be able to have helped me, but I'm just too crazy, mate. But,
gosh. I've noticed.
Okay, let's not talk out of the podcast room.
Okay, here we go. Next question.
When you were playing cricket at an international level, you were able to sightsee and go out of the hotel that you were staying at and explore the different countries or the different spaces that you were in. You were able to experience the different cultures of the countries that you were playing against. And I think a lot of players now are struggling to cope in the biosecure environments that we are in thanks to COVID. I've experienced a biosecure environment in a very small scale, but I can only imagine that players who have had the chance to, you know, play in other countries under biosecure environments find it quite difficult. And I just want to know, what would you be doing if you were in a biosecure environment to stay physically and mentally fit in order to play the game of cricket at your highest capability?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult enough to tour, right? And it comes back to this mental health question as well. It's kind of sort of intertwined, but it is difficult. I have not been in it. The closest I came was quarantining when I did hotel quarantine on my trip back from the Maldives. But
how many days?
Back then it was only 7 days. So
what, 7 days all alone
in a hotel room, and you're not allowed to leave, and you're not allowed to open the windows. But yeah, I don't really know, Jenna. I think the thing here is that at least now with the cricketers being professional, they, like we talked about, they have loads of support staff. They obviously have ways to get through this. I can imagine that they're trying to keep them busy with some routine training, potentially, you know, checking in via video call or whatever. Interesting. Actually, we should ask this to those people that travel like that. Maybe get Marizan or someone to dial in and tell us how they do it. But yeah, it must be tough. I mean, traveling on its own is tough. And you talk about sightseeing, etc., but people don't realize that actually you spend very little time sightseeing, and the days that you are off, your legs are so sore. Well, that's me, because I was about 40 when I ended. But you are so tired, and that you actually just want to lie in your room. So it's not a lot of sightseeing, but it's better than being stuck in your room. So, yeah, I unfortunately have no reference, but I can imagine that it must be really, really tough.
Yeah, I had to do that. It would be yoga, meditation, lots of Netflix.
Yeah, you see, I would really suck at it because I hate yoga and meditation, so it would literally drive me insane.
Just listen to guided meditations. It helps.
I can't even be alone in my head for 30 seconds, Betty. Oh, I don't want to go insane.
Oh my gosh, you need to speak to your psychologist about this. Okay, next question.
So it's a busy calendar year for the Momentum Proteas players, obviously with the World Cup currently going on, and then some players have that Fairbank tournament, and then the Ireland series for the squad, the England series, the Commonwealth Games, and then for some players, the 100 in England and the WBBL in Australia. And Shannon just wanted to know, what do you think the Momentum Proteas players need to be doing in order to make sure that they're fit enough physically, mentally, all of the above, to be able to manage this big workload that the team is going to experience over the course of this year?
I think she meant the fair break. I always get it confused. Fair bank, fair break. You know where we get it from. So the fair break, it's from the 1 to 15th of May in Dubai.
Yeah, so, yeah, actually I was going to be involved in that. I wonder what happened to that. I didn't get the cut in the end.
Oh, sorry. A lot of people didn't.
I'll have to apply for the next podcast then, because I have nothing else to do. No, I'm joking. look, you shouldn't be. If you're a professional cricket player, that's just no one should have to encourage you to be fit. Okay, to me, it's just a no-brainer. If you are unfit, you are overweight, whatever the case is, you're constantly injured or whatever. You only have yourself to blame.
Responsibility for yourself.
100%. It's not, if you were still amateur, you could potentially get away with it, even though I believed that you shouldn't have to be motivated to play for your country and to do stuff like that. But in this day and age, you have enough help or assistance from really good people, and you have enough motivation in the form of money. I'm sorry, but it just is what it is. But most importantly, the opportunity for you to play and do something you love as a day-to-day job should be enough to motivate you to be in the right space. So, if it is a case of you're not fit enough and you can't play all of those tournaments, then you shouldn't. I guess I'm pretty harsh like that, but as a captain, I always was like that as well.
You expect the best 100%. From the people. If you get selected, you need to work.
100%. If you look at yourself in the mirror every day, you should be able to say, I'm proud of who I am and what I look like and how fit I am. And if you're not, then you need to find that balance. So,
cool. Okay. Following on to the next one.
Marizane Kapp, Mignon Dupreuil, Shevnam Ismail, Trisha Chetty, they're all already in their 30s and they're still playing for the Momentum Proteas. And some are still performing, some not. But just as somebody who retired from the game at international level and provincial level, how did you know when it was time for you to kind of hang up the boots and say, it's time for me now to take a break from cricket and try and see what else is out there in the world?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult for them. Maybe I'll start with talking about my retirement. I retired quite early. I retired at 30, I think. I had already played for South Africa for 13 years, and I guess in my heart I kind of knew that I wasn't enjoying it anymore, and I had to, the moment I started hoping that it would rain rather than the sun would shine, I knew it was time for me to hang up my boots because I wasn't feeling passionate about it. And that's just being completely honest. I knew that, I didn't want to deal with the on-the-field politics. I didn't want to deal with the losing and the traveling. And, I was just, the enjoyment was so few and far between. I just knew. But I always obviously was scared because my whole life was cricket, right? And so, but I guess it was a bit different for me in the sense that I had worked, I was not professional, it wasn't like my income, etc. So, I could step away from it. I think for people like Trisha and Marizane Kapp and Mignon, it's slightly different in the sense that they have to try and make the most out of this now because this is their earnings, right? Which was something actually, and we can talk about this, I always said when I was younger, I said, my biggest fear is that people like Danae and them would not have sort of enough mentoring and guidance in terms of their education, so that at the day they stop earning money for cricket, that they would have, you know, something else to fall back on, because that adds more pressure on them, right? And it's not like they're Laura Wilford, that's now early 20s, that can earn for the rest of her life. Well, not rest of her life, but you know what I mean, right? And
for
now,
the next 10 years, she can still earn. Exactly. She's studying. After that, she's got a good future ahead. Not all girls are studying at the moment while they are playing cricket.
No, 100%. And I thought that England did this really well when they started going semi-professional. They sent their cricket players to Reading to study, or Loughborough to study, which means all of those ladies that have stopped have got a degree, right? Now, I know Mignon and them, some of them have done their own degrees, etc. And they'll be fine, probably, like Danae, they do some media work, etc. But not everybody would have that. So I think for me, if money wasn't a choice, I think each player should stop. And I think as a player, you know when that is.
This podcast will probably come out just before South Africa plays against the Indian women's team in the Cricket World Cup. And I just want to know from you, looking at the Indian batting lineup, on the log of most runs scored so far in the Cricket World Cup, we have Harmanpreet Kaur in fourth position, and she scored 256 runs at a strike rate of 99. And then Smriti Mandhana, who has scored 226 runs at a strike rate of 79.5. And I just want to know from you, how would you manage the fielding innings of the Momentum Proteas current team, being their captain hypothetically, so that big players like these two women are not able to score runs against the Proteas bowling attack?
Like McLanning.
It's easy, I'll just tell the bowlers to take their wickets. Yeah, I mean, we play international cricket, and that's the thing about it. Like, it isn't provincial cricket, right, or state cricket. You play against the best players in the world. So, I mean, I can sit here and say, as a captain, I would have, you know, made sure that the cover boundary is covered, you know, early on. But you can do that, and then a bowler's just slightly off point on the day, and then they bowl a bit too straight, and you get punished through the leg side. I'm someone that wholeheartedly believes in just focusing on myself and my team, and what we do well. Okay, I didn't enjoy when coaches started going into. I will never forget this. I quickly want to tell you this.
Okay.
Remember, we once did a analysis of Charlotte Edwards in an England tour, and we said we're going to put a deep mid wicket out because she's not really good at driving early on because her knees. I don't know. It was a whole long story, and I remember her scoring the biggest 100, and her wagon wheel was through the offside the whole day. So, you know. So you have to remember, when you play against these teams, these individuals are good for a reason. They don't just score in one area. They might be stronger in one area if you give them the chance. But they're good because they can actually grid it out, and they can play to their strengths. So yeah, for me, it's just about if I was the captain, I'd make sure we focus wholeheartedly on what we do well, and that I make sure that the team is relaxed and take their chances, because like against Australia, we dropped 7 catches or something, and you can't do that. So you start there, take your catches. That's it.
If that happened while you were captaining, would you have lost it on the field, or would you have stayed calm and encouraged?
I would have made like Shibnam into my shirt. No, look, as a captain, you can't throw your toys out of the cot, right? You just you need to stay calm.
Yeah, stay focused. Plan. Reassess.
Put your shirt over your mouth.
Yeah. Don't do what the analyst said you must do.
Oh my word! How many times have I sat in those analysis? It's too funny.
Okay, final question from Genesil.
And then just to finish off, I did not get the wonderful opportunity to play in a team alongside you and many other players in the current world of women's cricket in South Africa didn't get the same opportunity as Robin did and as the rest of your teammates did at the time. But to us, what advice would you give us, and me specifically, if I was ever to captain at a provincial level or a national level, what advice would you give me or players like me?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. Like I said to you earlier, I used to have quite a specific style, which came across as quite harsh, and it didn't always sit well. So I think you need to find a balance. I think if I could have told my younger self back then, I would have probably done some certain things differently. I think, Jenna, if you were to be the captain of your team, I think one important thing is to try as much as possible to be yourself, but also bear in mind that you're working with humans, right? And to always keep that balance in mind, that you can't just go out and be a leader and try and enforce or imprint your ways into people when it doesn't speak to them. So I think it's important that you find sort of the balance in it, that you remain yourself, but at the same time remember that you're working with just humans that are all trying to, look at my Yoda, that's the Yoda in me, yeah, right? Yeah.
Now, I feel Jenna Sill, I've seen her captain a few club games, the T10, and she is a great captain. She also does this segment on Instagram, Feel Good Cricket, go follow her, and she really talks about women's issues in cricket. I really recommend all the listeners, go find Jenna Sill, Feel Good Cricket.
Yeah, that's another take to it, right? So, not just being hard, but sometimes also understanding the human side of it. So.
Yeah, you can't just like, okay, why are you having a crap day? Come on, pick yourself up. You need to understand why that player is having a crap day. Understand what the day was when they arrived, before they arrived on the field.
Yeah, no, agree. But you also have to balance that with playing for your country. You can't always just be nice. So, but yeah, no, it's difficult. Being a leader is not easy. You're always on the spotlight. When you're too soft, you're too soft, and everyone will just walk over you. And when you're too hard, people think you're grumpy. So you'll never win.
Yeah, or a B-I-T-C-H.
Are you allowed to do this, to spell out words on your podcast?
I can do anything. I'll just have to put a disclaimer. Okay. Chris, this has been great. Anything else you want to say before you're off on your adventures to Portugal?
Yeah, Portugal. No, I think I said a lot. I'm sure the listeners are also wanting to take a break now from my voice. So no, but I think the last thing is it's just been wonderful to be part of sort of promoting the women's game and also being able to talk about, you know, women's cricket. And to hear Jenna, who I said was a little baby when I started, to hear her ask some pretty good questions and being able to answer it as well. So, yeah, it's been a great experience, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate it. And I hope to see you after the semifinals. Then we can discuss the final. Let's hope. I'm holding thumbs. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Women's Cricket South Africa. I'll see you next week. Have a good listen.
Thank you for listening to the Women's Cricket South Africa podcast. Please find us on our website, womenscricket.co.za, and Women's Cricket South Africa on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you get your podcasts. Catch you in the next episode, and we're out.